The Taj Express. The Taj Express, a series of contemporary Indian stories with pictures painted in sound. Prepare yourself for a unique radio experience as we take you on a journey across India on the Taj Express.
Today on the Taj Express, we present The Hungry Stones by India's most well-known author, Rabindranath Tagore. When Tagore was 17, he spent some time with his brother in an old Mughal palace in Shahibagh. And in his imagination, he relived the court life of the Mughal kings. We present David Warrilow, Arjun Sajnani, and Laura Esterman in Rabindranath Tagore's classic tale, The Hungry Stones.
My kinsman and I were returning to Calcutta from our puja trip when we met him on the train. He spoke so confidently on all subjects that we sat and listened absolutely intrigued by the man. Even on the most trivial topic, he would quote science or comment on the Vedas or repeat quatrains from some Persian poet. We had never left our homes before. We had no knowledge of science or the Vedas or Persian. He spoke of secret forces at work, that the Russians had advanced close to us, that the English had deep and secret policies, that confusion among the native chiefs had come to a point.
Ah, there happen more things in heaven and earth, Horatio, than are reported in your newspapers.
There was such a strange feeling about the man. He was such an extraordinary person. My kinsman, who is a theosophist, was convinced that he must have been supernaturally inspired by some strange occult power or astral body. Night fell. I dozed for a short time, and for some reason, suddenly I awoke. He was looking at me. And then this remarkable person began to tell a story. An absolutely incredible tale that... You'll see why I got no sleep that night.
I had a disagreement regarding administrative policy, so I quit my post at Junagar and entered the service of the Nizam of Hyderabad. Since I was a strong young man, they appointed me as collector of cotton duties at Barich. Barich is a lovely place. The river Sustra chatters over stones and babbles on the pebbles, winding through the woods below those lovely hills. A flight of 150 steps rises from the river, and above, there stands a solitary marble palace. Nobody lives nearby. The village and the cotton market are far away. About 250 years ago, Emperor Mahmud Shah II built this lovely palace for his pleasure. In those days, jets of rose water spurted from its fountains, and on the cold marble floors of its spray-cooled rooms, young Persian girls sat, their soft, naked feet in the clear water of the reservoirs. They would sing the ghazals, the songs of their vineyards, to the music of the santur. The fountains play no longer, the songs have long ceased, and white feet no longer step gracefully on the snowy marble. Karim Khan, the old clerk in my office, warned me not to take up residence in that mansion.
Pass the day there if you like, but never stay the night.
Oh, come now.
The place has such a bad name that not even thieves will venture near it after dark.
I'm afraid I don't believe that.
Stand back! Stand back! All is fall.
Who is that?
All is fall.
Is he mad?
Yes, he's mad.
Well, I find it a fascinating place, and I plan to stay there.
Your servants will not stay there after dark.
Oh, that shouldn't be too inconvenient.
As you wish.
It was the beginning of summer. The market being dull, I had no work to do. A little before sunset, I was sitting in an armchair near the water's edge. The River Suster had sunk low. A broad patch of sand on the other side glowed with the hues of evening. On this side, the pebbles at the bottom of the clear, shallow waters were glistening. There was not a breath of wind anywhere. The air was laden with an oppressive scent from the spicy shrubs growing on the hills. As the sun sank behind the hilltops, a long, dark curtain fell upon the stage of day. The hills cut short the time in which light and shade mingled at sunset. I thought of going out for a ride. I started to get up when I heard a footfall on the steps behind me. I looked around. There was no one. I sat down again, thinking, what an odd illusion. This time, there were many footfalls, as if a number of persons were hurrying down the steps. A strange thrill of delight mingled with fear passed through my body. Though there was no figure before my eyes, I thought I saw a group of young women coming down the steps to bathe in the Suster that summer evening. Not a sound broke the silence of the valley, the river, or the palace, but I distinctly heard their laughter as they ran past me toward the river without noticing me at all. They were invisible to me, and I was invisible to them. The river was perfectly calm, but I felt its shallow waters were suddenly stirred by the splashing of arms jingling with bracelets. The girls laughed and splashed water at one another, while the feet of those who were swimming tossed up tiny waves in a shower of pearls. I felt a thrill. I cannot say whether it was due to fear or curiosity. I wanted to see them more clearly, but nothing was visible. I thought I could catch what they were saying if I sat perfectly still and listened. But I heard nothing, only the chirping of the cicadas in the woods. It seemed as if a dark curtain of 250 years was hanging before me, and I could lift a corner and peer through, even though the other side was completely enveloped in darkness. The oppressive closeness of the evening was suddenly broken by a gust of wind. The surface of the Suster rippled and curled like the hair of a nymph, and from the woods, still wrapped in the evening gloom, there came a simultaneous murmur, as though they too were awakening from a black dream. Call it dream or reality, the momentary glimpse of that invisible mirage reflected from a far-off world, 250 years old, vanished in a flash. The mystic forms that brushed past me with their ethereal steps and voiceless laughter and threw themselves into the river did not go back, wringing their dripping robes. Like fragrance wafted away by a sudden breeze, they were dispersed by a single breath of wind. I was filled with the fear that it was the muse that had taken advantage of my solitude and possessed me. The witch had come to ruin a poor poet and artist like myself who was making a living by collecting cotton duties. I decided to have a good dinner. I sent for my cook and gave orders for a sumptuous Mowgli dinner. Next morning, the whole affair seemed like a bizarre fantasy. With a light heart, I put on a solar hat like the salves and drove out to my work. I was to have written the quarterly report that day. I expected to return late, but before it was dark, I was strangely drawn to that mansion by what I could not say. I felt they were waiting, and I should not delay any longer. I left the report unfinished and returned in my carriage to that marble palace on the gloomy skirts of the hills. On the first floor, the stairs led to a spacious hall, its roof stretching over ornamental arches, resting on three rows of massive pillars and groaning day and night under the weight of its own solitude. The day had just come to an end and the lamps had not been lit. As I pushed the door open, there was a great bustle, as if a throng of people had broken in confusion and rushed out through the doors and corridors, making a hurried escape. I saw no one. I stood there, bewildered, my hair on end in a kind of ecstatic delight. A faint scent of attar and unguents, effaced by age, lingered in my nostrils. Standing in the darkness between the rows of those ancient pillars, I could hear the gurgle of fountains splashing on the marble floor, the jingle of ornaments, the clang of bells tolling the hour, the crystal pendants of chandeliers shaken by the breeze, the song of bulbuls from cages in the corridors, the cackle of storks in the gardens, all creating a strange, unearthly music.